no dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
You're listening to Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
And today we have Burke Stansbury on the line
from Washington, and Burke is the coordinator of CISPES, the Committees in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador. Now, we've been seeing reports about the election fever, if you like, stepping up with the right-wing arena party playing a little bit dirty. So it's obviously, it's very important, these elections. They really seem to be scared of the FMLN winning. Now, why are they so important?
Well, it's a really important political moment right now in Latin America in general. There's been a series of victories by left and center-left parties in other countries, you know, from Bolivia to Ecuador, most recently in Paraguay. So there's this momentum, and El Salvador is the next country to have presidential elections. So should the FMLN win, it's going to really carry on that momentum of left victories in Latin America.
Mm.
And I think the Bush administration, the State Department, you know, they've been nervous for a while, and they're getting increasingly so, especially since their few allies that still exist, you know, El Salvador, Mexico, Colombia, they're becoming fewer and fewer. And so if they were to lose El Salvador, that would be another big blow.
Right. And so what would a victory for the FMLN mean in, I suppose, concrete terms?
It would mean a very significant political and economic shift in El Salvador. It would take some time, though. I think people have pointed out that the FMLN's candidate right now is taking a fairly moderate posture around the kind of reforms that he would implement. And, you know, we have to remember that the FMLN is a former guerrilla force, you know, Marxist in its roots, and many of the members and leaders of the party come from a very strong left background of organizing and of, you know, taking up arms to fight the really repressive regime that existed in the 70s and 80s in El Salvador. And so that's the history of the FMLN. It's still very strong. I think their orientation is still strong in terms of their critique of the current neoliberal system, but their candidate is somewhat more moderate, and I think that's positive in the sense that there needs to be a sort of moderate change that happens in El Salvador, that it can't be all done at once, especially because the system that exists there, the economic system that's already been implemented, has been institutionalized in a lot of ways. The free trade agreements, the privatization, the dollarization. And so it's not going to be possible for a candidate to just come in and change everything overnight. But nevertheless, when you had one right-wing party controlling the country for almost 20 years and implement.
Hello.
Have led El Salvador into a pretty devastating economic and social situation. You know, getting that party out of the power is going to be a huge deal for El Salvador and for Salvadorans. And so it will represent a significant shift.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of their international relations and their relations with the other Latin American countries, and I guess particularly with the ones you just referred to, and Venezuela as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, so that's the, you know, I sort of gave the national context, but the international context is almost just as important, because El Salvador right now doesn't have relationships with Cuba or with Venezuela. They're almost non-existent. El Salvador, oftentimes in structures like the Organization of American States, it sort of does the U.S.'s bidding for it, and therefore has consistently taken a strong position of challenging Cuba and Venezuela and other left governments in Latin America. So all of a sudden that would shift because the FMLN would actually be working with these governments and would be open to working with all of the current Latin American governments and other governments throughout the world that El Salvador is basically cut off to because of its close relationship with the U.S. government. So that would be huge. And I think the reason that the FMLN can take power right now and be successful is also related to that, because an FMLN government will have support and access to credit from new institutions like the Banco del Sur, potentially, or other places where it won't be totally dependent on the U.S. And so there is this possibility and this opportunity, based on the shift that's happened in Latin America, for the FMLN to gain support.
Okay, could you just sort of briefly explain to our listeners what is the Banco del Sur and what's the significance of it?
Well, part of the rebellion that's taken place in Latin America in recent years has been against the IMF and the World Bank. These institutions being at the forefront of implementing this free trade neoliberal model, you know, structural adjustment, all these types of programs. Obviously, it's come from the United States, from the Washington Consensus, but you know, the institutions that have really implemented it are the IMF and the World Bank. Well, all of a sudden what you have is an alternative institution being created in Latin America that would perform the same purpose of the IMF and the World Bank, the positive purpose, which is to provide access to credit to these poor countries, but without all the stipulations and conditions and the sort of stranglehold that these institutions have had on Latin American countries, telling them exactly what sort of political economy they need to implement in order to receive loans and other things. So there's a lot of hope around the Banco del Sur and other alternative institutions and trade blocs that are being created, which don't involve and don't depend on the U.S. government, the IMF, or the World Bank.
Yes, I understand that NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, you know, had quite a significant effect on the Salvadoran economy. And there's also a Central American Free Trade Agreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, CAFTA was passed by the U.S. Congress in 2005, and actually CISPAS and a number of organizations were very involved in opposing and trying to stop CAFTA. It ended up only passing by 2 votes in the U.S. Congress after a real big battle and kind of dirty backroom deals by the Republicans. But it did pass, and the experience so far has been really negative. It hasn't, you know, the promises, the all the pro-CAFTA propaganda throughout the, you know, from about 2002 up until it was passed in 2005 said that, you know, it was going to create jobs, it was going to allow, you know, the street corner vendors, you know, who selling their pupusas to be able to export them to the United States. Like, suddenly everyone was going to be prospering under CAFTA. That was the rhetoric. It was really kind of funny, you know, like that they even put that forward in that way. But of course, the reverse has been true. It hasn't created jobs. It's actually undermined a lot of farmers and others because of these cheap imports that are coming in. And on the whole, the balance has not been very positive since CAFTA went into effect. And, you know, CISPAS is part of a coalition called the Stop CAFTA Coalition that's going to be putting out a report about some of these effects and showing how it hasn't, in the nearly three years since it's been implemented, it hasn't really had any positive effects.
Yes, when we were talking a few weeks ago, Burke, you were saying you'd met your delegation to El Salvador, had gotten admission from the U.S. ambassador there that the US had sort of intervened to influence the 2004 elections, but of course he said they had no such plans for the 2009 elections. Yet I notice on your on the webpage, the CISPY's webpage, there was a character who goes back many years. Negroponte was in the region and making statements about it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. John Negroponte is a name that a lot of people, anyone who's studied Latin America, Central America especially, will remember. And he's definitely a pariah kind of figure in El Salvador and in Honduras, where he was ambassador for a number of years. You know, he has been responsible for a lot of the intervention, and you know, he was tied up in the Iran-Contra affair. He's just a bad news guy, and so for people who remember that era, the 1980s and the role that he played at that time, it is a little scary to see his name back in the news again when he made this visit to El Salvador. And right now he's the Deputy Secretary of State, assigned to Latin America, so he's playing a very prominent role in the U.S. State Department, and he's a figure that has a lot of power and works very closely with Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State. And so his trip to El Salvador was pretty significant, and although he didn't make the kind of blatant anti-FMLN, pro-right-wing Arena Party statements that some of his predecessors made in 2004. You know, back then they came right out and said, you know, the FMLN's bad news, we won't work with the FMLN, or we question whether we'll work with the FMLN if they win. No, Negroponte didn't do that, but what he did do is sort of make some insinuations about the relationship of the FMLN to the FARC rebels in Colombia. And because the FARC's been in the news a lot with the attack that happened and the laptops that were stolen and all sorts of insinuations about who the FARC has connections with based on files that are supposedly recovered in this laptop. So, you know, Negroponte making these kind of statements about, you know, terrorism and the FARC and not working with anyone who has connections with terrorism is sort of an underhanded way of attacking the FMLN. And he also, you know, he sort of raised issues about terrorism in El Salvador and in Central America that are pretty ridiculous, I think, to make. You know, there are a lot of problems in El Salvador, but organized terrorism, the kind that the U.S. refers to in their so-called war on terrorism, is, you know, that's not one of the things that exists in El Salvador. He definitely made an effort to sort of talk about that, and so that I think was significant, and we consider that the kind of intervention that could have an impact in El Salvador and that the U.S. government should really refrain from using.
Yeah, I think they also used those tactics in Nicaragua a few years ago, threatening to withdraw any aid if the Sandinista party won, but I guess with Venezuela being able to help them out with their economy, the Sandinistas did actually get back into power. So let's hope we see the same thing happen in El Salvador next year. Thanks for talking with us, Burke.